enjoy all your comments and phone calls and emails. Keep them coming. Thanks for listening. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. If you stayed up till about 3 in the morning yesterday night, Eastern Time, as I did, you finally got the results that you've been waiting for from last night's exciting primaries and caucuses in Texas and Ohio, Vermont, and Rhode Island. And the answer is no answer. It's kind of like the 2000 Bush v. Gore race, only it's in the Democratic primary. I certainly can't recall in my lifetime a primary as close as this one. And the general conventional wisdom is this is bad for the Democratic Party. The conventional wisdom is this hurts us, that John McCain will be rested and ready. He won the nomination last night. He is the Republican nominee. The Democrats are still neck and neck, tearing each other apart, tearing the party apart. And basically, the fear is that the bad things Hillary says about Obama will be used against him if he wins. And that Obama may have to go negative against Hillary, and then that will be used against her if she wins. I'm not so sure I share the conventional wisdom. I do see the problem. I'm not arguing that it's wrong. It's certainly to have Democrats at each other's throats when the other party is solid and unifying and John McCain is going, getting the blessing of President Bush and trying to get all the conservatives in line. Normally, at face value, that's a bad thing, right? Republicans are unified, Democrats are fighting among each other. But I'm not so sure it's the case. I think that actually, as long as we are all clear to ourselves, to our friends, to our allies, that if we don't get our first choice, and some of us, by the way, didn't get our first choice because our first choice was John Edwards or Dennis Kucinich or Bill Richardson or Joe Biden or Chris Dodd. I kind of like Chris Dodd, by the way. I really think if he'd been in the race, I might have voted for him. Anyway, if you don't get your first choice between Obama and Clinton, will you desert the party? I don't think so. There are people who are threatening to do it. There is a poll that came out of Ohio where about a quarter of Obama voters said they could not stomach Hillary, and about a quarter of Hillary voters said they could not stomach Obama. But I guess I don't believe them. I don't want to believe them. And I don't want that number to grow. Because at the end of the day, I don't know that this is so bad for the party. I want to explore this hour with the help of your calls, of course. All the implications of what happened last night. Not just for the Democrats, but for John McCain as well. You know, what does it mean that the very first thing he did after getting nominated was running to George Bush? Frankly, if I were a Democratic pollster, I could have designed a better outcome. Yes, we will call him John McSame as he runs for a George Bush third term, and that will be appropriate. No, not because he'll be exactly the same as George Bush, but in most important matters he will. In terms of continuing war, continuing recession, continuing corporate control of our government, continuing collapse of the Constitution. How many C's was that? That's all John McCain. And I think it will continue. But let's talk first about the Democratic race. It is the race that has America on fire. And what's fascinating about all of this is that I guess America loves an underdog. I remember way back to Iowa when everyone counted Hillary out. And then she won New Hampshire, and then she was the front runner, and then people felt bad for Obama, and then he won a string of races, and now it seems it is Hillary's turn. But I think what happened in the last week is Obama made some mistakes, let's face it. And I don't know that it's such a bad thing. Here's why. Every campaign makes mistakes. Every campaign has hard times. No candidate is perfect. Every candidate has things that he or she would rather the American people don't know about. That would be true of Obama or Clinton or Al Gore or, heck, any one of us. Probably much worse for any one of us. So I just as soon get it out now. Let's talk about it now. Let Hillary throw her fastest, meanest punches at Obama. And some Obama bots, they call them, or Obama maniacs or Obama fans, some of them are really angry at Hillary Clinton for going negative. She, of course, last weekend did the famous 3 a.m. phone call ad. Same one, actually, that Walter Mondale used against Gary Hart in 1984. It's a more updated phone. But you must have seen the ads by now. There are little children sleeping, and the phone rings. And the question is, it's 3 a.m., something terrible is going on in the world. Who do you want picking up the phone? And it ends, of course, with Hillary Clinton picking up the phone. And some Obama supporters cried foul. I actually think it was fair. And, you know, I did endorse Obama. I am an Obama supporter. I mean, to be fair, I am not a, oh my God, Obama's got to win and Hillary's got to lose kind of Obama supporter. If you listen to my endorsement of Barack Obama, and I really encourage you to listen to that show. You can find it in my broadcast archive at RadioInsideScoop.com. I lay out each of the candidates and say where I support Hillary, for example. I support her health care plan over Obama's health care plan. Where I support Obama, you know, he was right on Iraq from the beginning. He can make a better argument on there from McCain. And I go through each of their advantages, and I basically come down to a tie. And, yes, that was partly for entertainment value. I did save my endorsement for the last 3-5 minutes of the show. But it really wasn't just that. I wasn't just playing with you, folks. I really had a tough, tough decision. I see benefits of both of them. Something in me still wants to see them run together. Something, it is a shame, both because of the history, the very first African-American candidate to seriously have a shot at winning the Democratic nomination, the very first female candidate to have a shot at winning the nomination, but also because I think both of them are pretty damn good. I think both of them, for example, are far better than John Kerry in 2004. And while looking at recent candidates, I did prefer Al Gore over either of them, both of them, really, when you compare it to the current politics, they're just right on so many issues, whether it's health care or America's role in the world or getting us out of Iraq or caring about individuals in America. No, they're not perfect, but in terms of a good candidate representing progressive values, I think both of them are 80% there. And I don't know that we can get more than 80% there. So what happened last week? Hillary did the 3 a.m. commercial, and I think a lot of people said, do we want Obama picking up the phone? The concern with Obama is, yes, that he's new to the scene. And it's something that cuts both ways. And some people, particularly young people, I think that's a favorable thing. They're tired of the old politics, they say, as Obama will say. They're tired of the old politics. They want a new face. Certainly, we haven't had in our generation someone who's as good a speaker as Barack Obama. Though, as Bob Kincaid points out to me, you know, young people weren't around. I wasn't around, certainly. And certainly people younger than me weren't around when Martin Luther King was speaking or Robert Kennedy was speaking. It's just rare to have anyone that inspiring in politics today. And there's something to be said for that. But I want to go and explore what it is that happened in Texas and Ohio. You know, Rhode Island, I think, was always Hillary's, and Vermont was always Barack Obama's. Three things happened. One was the Resco scandal, the developer that is a little shady that Barack Obama was dealing with. It went on trial this week. One was the NAFTA flap. You know about that, right? Involving the Canadians. We'll get there. And I think the third was this ad by Hillary Clinton. And I'll deal with each of the of those things, but I think that we need to explore the question, and that is, can Barack Obama take a punch? And it's what all the media is asking, and it's good that they're asking it. If Hillary Clinton had lost in Ohio and Texas, I think she would have pulled out of the race. Now, if she'd won one, she would have stayed in. But had she lost both, most Democrats thought she should leave. 45% thought she should stay if she lost both. 67% thought she should stay if she lost one, which was my position. She should stay if she won one and lost one. But by winning both, she really made the media and will increasingly make the media focus on Obama. And he needs to be examined, warts and all. And it needs to happen now. Because I guarantee you it will happen between now and November. It'll probably happen in October. And I don't want Americans to be surprised. One of the things about politics is in some ways it's like practicing law. If you have something negative and you're a trial lawyer and there's some bad part of your case, you do something called drawing the sting. And that means if you're a trial lawyer and your client or your witness has been in jail or has done some terrible act, you don't wait till the end. You don't wait till cross-examination. You don't let the other side bring it up. You bring it up. You bring it up first. You show you have nothing to hide, and you do that, and you move on. And, for example, Barack Obama was very smart to bring up his early drug use. He did it himself. He did it in his book. He did it on his terms. And now it's no scandal. There's really not much to talk about. You don't, in fact, see Republicans going there very much. That's not the issue that they talk about. But when you get to surprises, one thing comes to mind is George Bush not reporting his drunk driving arrests and convictions prior to his election, excuse me, his selection in 2000. And I think that hurt him. Now, I would have loved had some enterprising reporter also brought out that he was convicted of cocaine use and had to do community service, something I've explored on my website, and I suggest you look back there if you want evidence of that. But in general, the idea is this. The problem that Obama has, for example, with Tony Rezko, that is going to be a household name by November. Jeremiah Wright, his pastor, it's going to be a household name by November. And I'd much rather people know now. I'd much rather Hillary hit him now and hit him as hard as she possibly can. Fairly. I mean, don't lie. Some of these ways that Obama's been hurting have been complete lies, such as these nasty email campaigns that say he's Muslim or something like that. But hit him at least or almost as hard as the Republicans will. So who is Tony Rezko? Tony Rezko is a developer. He actually isn't a slumlord. Hillary was wrong about that. I think she mixed up him with someone else. But he is a sleazy guy. He's about to go on trial for a whole host of money laundering and other type crimes. And he is someone who apparently got millions of dollars from a shady Iraqi businessman. And part of that money went into buying property that was adjacent to Barack Obama's. And Barack Obama bought the property at a discount and from Tony Rezko. So to me, this is sort of like Whitewater. It's a conduct that's perfectly legal, but seems a little shady. Seems a little shady because, you know, Tony Rezko is probably going to be indicted. He is indicted, and he might be convicted soon. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know. I mean, if I got a mafioso even across my yard, and I want to expand my yard, and they're offering me a good price, and I'm a politician, I probably shouldn't deal with him. Obama has admitted it was a mistake. But nothing illegal here. Just kind of, I don't know, kind of gross. But let's get it out. Again, I don't know any politician that doesn't have something like this in their background. You know, there are a few purists. I don't know. Paul Wellstone comes to mind. I can't imagine him doing anything like this. Or maybe Russ Feingold, senator from Wisconsin. But most of them do this kind of stuff. And again, I don't think he's done anything illegal. Here's the thing. Don't blame Hillary for bringing up Tony Rezko. I'm glad she did. Because I think that if Obama is the nominee, he'll be inoculated. Many of us know how you get how do you get a smallpox vaccine. They give you a little bit of the disease. They used to give you a little bit of the live disease. Now they give you the dead disease, and your body builds antibodies to it. And then, if the real thing comes along, you're protected against it. I actually think Hillary may be serving that function for Obama. Not purposely, don't get me wrong. I don't think Hillary's doing it to help Obama. Of course not. But I actually think it has that unintended effect. Get it out now. Discuss it now. Discuss it 9 months before November of this year. And let's just get rid of it. And soon the public will say, you know what, that's old news. And when the Swift voters come along and Karl Rove people come along and the Whispering Campaign comes along and goes after Obama, it'll be old news. It won't be a shock. It won't be a reason for people to turn against him. So I actually think there's a silver lining. I really think there's a silver lining to this crowd. Let's go to another, to this cloud, another example. That is Pastor Jeremiah Wright. Pastor Jeremiah Wright is a controversial figure, no doubt. He is the pastor of Obama's church, where he's gone for 20 years. Obama's book, The Audacity of Hope, comes from Pastor Jeremiah Wright's sermon. Jeremiah Wright married Obama, Barack Obama, and Michelle Obama. So what's the problem? Well, if you look at Obama's church, there are some things that Wright has done that seem troublesome, and some really are troublesome, and I'll try to distinguish between them in my mind. And by the way, let me just make clear, if you want to call in and discuss any of this, I do want to encourage any of you, agree or disagree, to give me a call, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Come on in and let me know what you think. But in terms of Jeremiah Wright, one of the allegations against him is he's this radical black pastor. He has an Africano-centric church. Well, to some extent, that's true. And to some extent, that's fair. Let me explain. Yes, Barack Obama's church is Africano-centric. They look back to Africa for their traditions. The great majority of people are African-American, and they talk about dealing with and helping people in the African-American community. That is their focus. Is that racist? You know, I don't think so. Well, if a white church did that, if a white church said we want to focus on, you know, white, our whiteness and our white heritage and only help white people, would that be racist? Damn right it would be racist. So what's the difference? Well, I think the difference is that when you're in a minority in America, minorities often stick together and promote their own ethnic groups. And you know what? I don't see a problem with that. I think if you're in the majority, you have all kinds of benefits in America that already exist. But all I have to do is look at, I don't know, the Korean community or the Latino community or, heck, the Bulgarian community, Russian community. Look at the Jewish community. Look at the old Irish community, though it probably doesn't need it anymore. Even Germans, when they first came to America, had churches where, guess what, the liturgy was in German. And they promoted other fellow Germans. I don't think it's racist. I don't think it's racist for the Russian Orthodox Church to be talking about promoting jobs in the Russian Orthodox community and encouraging people to hire other Russian Orthodox immigrants. I think that that's kind of the way our country has worked. Now, is it fair? I don't know. Certainly, in a Title VII sense, it's not fair. I mean, you shouldn't in any way say, I will only hire people of my race or color. You definitely shouldn't deny someone a job on the basis of their race or religion. But the idea that people help immigrants of their own, I just think it's the American way. I think it's happened for more than 200 years. I think every ethnic group has helped others come in. And I don't see in Pastor Jeremiah Wright's rhetoric anything more than that. I really don't. And I've read his rhetoric very carefully. I see it as a way of taking a very poor and depressed area of Chicago, the slums of southwest Chicago, which are, you know, the dregs, the ghetto. And it's a way to build people up with some ethnic pride. And sure, I wish at the end of the day we could put race issues aside And I do think race is just a construct, a social construct, but it matters. I did a speech at the University of the District of Columbia on George Bush and his ties to African Americans, or his lack of programs for African Americans. And by the way, that's also you can get to the link from my website. But I argue in that, and I check it out if you want, that even though race is just a construct, it does matter that race has decided American policy for hundreds of years, mostly for the negative. And that the idea that people, that blacks would help blacks, I just don't see it as a bad thing. So what about the other positions of Jeremiah Wright? Well, unlike a lot of African-American preachers, he happens to be pretty good to gay people. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. A lot of African-American preachers, a lot of preachers, period, are not so good to gay people. He's got some pretty radical foreign policy ideas, it seems, Pastor Jeremiah Wright. I believe he's praised Hugo Chavez. Certainly don't agree with him on that. He did go with Louis Farrakhan on a trip to Libya. He said he doesn't endorse Farrakhan's views, but he has said that Farrakhan is a great man. And, of course, his church newsletter, run by his daughter, gave an award to Farrakhan. Now, Obama has made clear he doesn't support this. Obama has made absolutely clear that he has condemned Farrakhan's strong anti-Semitism, and that he thinks that was a mistake of the church, and it was the wrong thing to do. But he says his pastor is not an anti-Semite. That was just a mistake. Is this a problem? Yeah, it's a problem. You're going to hear about Jeremiah Wright. If you haven't heard about him now, if I'm the first to tell you about it, I guarantee you, you will hear his name 100 more times between now and November if Obama is the nominee. But let's get it out now. Let's talk about it now. Whatever the views of Jeremiah Wright, Obama has made clear that he doesn't agree with everything his pastor stands for. I don't think many of us agree with everything that the minister in our church or the rabbi in our synagogue or the imam in our mosque stands for. And there is an argument that, yeah, he should have left the church. But, you know, you want to help poor black people, and this is the largest church that does that. And, you know, Oprah is a member of the church. I don't think anyone accuses her of being anti-Semitic. You know, Pastor Wright has terrible views on Israel. But Obama has made clear he doesn't share those views. He doesn't. Obama's very strong on supporting the state of Israel and very strong on supporting Israel's right of self-defense. But that doesn't stop the Republican Jewish Coalition from plying people with mailboxes in their emails and saying all kinds of things that are against Obama. Again, let him take the punch now. Let him deal with it. And in fact, I myself have written on Daily Kos some defenses of Obama, showing that indeed he does support Israel despite the attacks against him. There are also attacks against Obama that are less pretty, that are not coming from Hillary Clinton. And while, by the way, I think the Resco thing is fair for her to bring up, I think the 3 a.m. is okay for her to bring up, but there are attacks that I'm sure are not coming from Hillary Clinton. There's this stupid Obama in a robe in Kenya, you know, putting on the native garb that some Republican drenched up. Frankly, I actually think that helps him now, to get it out now. He looks nothing but uncomfortable in those African robes, and he has them over, you know, a very plain red shirt and khaki pants. He clearly looks like the uncomfortable Westerner he is, putting on native garb. And while every politician does that, he does not look like an African tribal man at all. And that's a good thing, because people will try to use it against him. And I think it flopped. Now, there are darker things that are succeeding. And let me be clear. If you ask voters in Ohio or Texas why they voted for Hillary Clinton rather than Barack Obama, many of them will say, well, he won't cite the Pledge of Allegiance, or he's Muslim, or he won't put his hand on the Bible, or he doesn't know the words to the national anthem. All four of those things are absolutely 100% false. Complete fabricated lies. But I have to say, I don't think Hillary Clinton is putting forward those lies. If she has, I think the entire Democratic Party should rise up as one and condemn her. But I really don't think she has. I think this is Karl Rove, or his ilk, and they're putting up these falsehoods. I've received them in my own email box. You probably have as well. I'll tell you what I do, and I'll encourage all of you to do the same. When I get in my email box, Obama is a Muslim, or Obama won't cite the Pledge of Allegiance, I don't just email the person who sent it to me. I go down and I look at the history of that email, and I find, and it takes some time, folks, I find all 100 people that were forwarded from that person to the person before them, the person before them, the person before them, and every single person who got the email, and I say, hi, you don't know me, but you got this email, and it's false, and it's libelous, and frankly, you should be ashamed of yourself for passing it on. And I want the person who passed it on to admit that it's a lie, because I don't want people to believe it's true, and then I give all these citations. In fact, if any of you want an example of one of my letters, email me and I'll show you. And by the way, it's not just for Obama. I would do this for Hillary Clinton. I have done it for Nancy Pelosi in the past. I mean, it's okay to legitimately complain about a politician's policies. If you want to complain about Obama's ties to Resco, I wouldn't send you a nasty email back. That's fair. I actually think that's overwrought, but that's an opinion. That's not a fact. But to say he's Muslim, or to, as Obama very nicely put in his 60 Minutes interview, that's not just an attack on Obama. It's an attack on Muslims. It suggests that it's a bad thing. And I realize we've got a lot of anti-Muslim prejudice in the United States, so no question about it. But this kind of false statement should not be allowed and should be fought back, and I have. So, yes, the press is finally focusing on Obama. They're finally attacking him. Part of it may be the writer's strike is over, and Tina Fey of Saturday Night Live did a strong comic piece about how the media is fawning all over Obama. And I have to say, to some extent, I think it's true. In the most recent debate, where you had Tim Russert ask many, many gotcha questions of Hillary Clinton, including the name of Medvedev, I think I sound like Hillary Clinton, in the name of Putin's hand-picked successor, asked her, and then, asking him, well, it's kind of too late. It's, he could have had them both write down the answer. But it's unfair, obviously, to ask Hillary the question and not to ask Obama the question. Bob tells me it's Medvedev. Thank you, Bob. But I think that the media has been very easy on Obama, and he did make a mistake last week that we need to talk about. And the mistake has to do with NAFTA. Now, many of you know the North American Free Trade Agreement. It was negotiated by Bill Clinton. Many progressives have problems with it. I happen to support free trade, but I recognize that when you have environmental regulations in America and not in the foreign country, or when you have labor rates that are 1/20th of ours, you can't fairly compete. So I recognize there need to be some changes in NAFTA, although I generally think that free trade should be the rule, and maybe some of you disagree with me on that, should be the rule, and you should work around the edges. I actually agree with both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that we need to renegotiate NAFTA, but I don't think we need a major renegotiation. I think we need a minor renegotiation. Frankly, with Canada, we hardly need a negotiation at all. With Mexico, a little bit more, because they don't have the environmental regulations or the wage issues that we have. But what happened after Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton went in their debate and said that they would renegotiate NAFTA? One of Obama's economic advisors, actually his lead economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, went apparently to talk to a Canadian minister to say that, don't worry, it won't be all that bad. Well, Obama was asked, did your minister talk to the Canadians about NAFTA? And Obama made a mistake. What he should have said is, I don't know, I don't think so, but I'll find out. He could have said that. He didn't. He just said no. Without asking Goolsbee, he just said no, that never happened. That's a mistake. A rookie error, if you will. And what happened? Goolsbee had talked to the guy. Now, maybe it wasn't as bad as it seemed. Maybe Goolsbee didn't really make it as bad as the media made it. But once you tell a falsehood to the press, you're in trouble. Now, to be clear, I do not think that Barack Obama intentionally lied to the press. What I think he did is he didn't know about Goolsbee's talk. He assumed it didn't happen. And he said that assumption rather than saying, I'll go check. And then when the Canadian minister came out in the press talking about the conversation, Obama had egg on his face. But again, I think that bringing all this out now, catching the rookie errors now, it makes him a stronger candidate for the fall. The way I see it, last night was inoculation for Barack Obama. He's getting a little bit of live smallpox, and if he can fight it off and beat it, he will be a stronger candidate for McCain in the fall. And if he cannot, if this destroys him, then you know what? I don't want him as my nominee. If he can't take a hit, and God knows Republicans pack a much mightier punch than Hillary Clinton, her punches may be strong, theirs are stronger. If he can't survive this, then I want her as my nominee. We need a tough candidate. We need a fighter. And if Barack Obama can't take a punch, then go Hillary Clinton. If you want to call in and discuss anything that I've said today, give me a call. 877-4-HEAD-ON. 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Boy, thank you, Ohio!
Senator Hillary Clinton re-energized her campaign Tuesday night with wins in Ohio and Rhode Island. She was leading in Texas when she spoke to supporters in Ohio, where she won union households, women, and blue-collar workers without college degrees.
The people of Ohio have said it loudly and clearly. We're going on, we're going strong, and we're going all the way.
Senator Barack Obama won Vermont and still leads in the number of pledged delegates.
Because of a movement you built that stretches from Vermont's Green Mountains to the streets of San Antonio, we can stand up. We can stand up with confidence and clarity to say that we are turning the page and we are ready to write the next great chapter in America's story. We want a new course for this country. We want new leadership in Washington. We want change in America.
New Jersey could soon join California and Washington if the Assembly passes a progressive sick leave law. Jesse Russell reports.
California started the trend in 2004. The state passed a law that now allows workers to take up to 6 weeks paid leave in order to care for a sick relative or a newborn. Washington followed suit and in October of 2009 will allow workers to take 5 weeks. On Monday, the New Jersey State Senate passed a bill that would provide the Garden State's 4.1 million workers with that same option. The bill passed 22-16, and the Assembly is expected to weigh the bill in coming weeks. If it makes it to his desk, Governor John Corzine has vowed to sign the bill into law. Workers who qualify for the leave would be paid two-thirds of their salary, up to $502 per week. Opponents of the bill are concerned that it could hurt small businesses and would encourage businesses to move to nearby Pennsylvania. Here is today's economic report. Too much work can be impacting your performance at work. A new study called Sleep in America by the National Sleep Foundation has found many Americans doing 4.5 hours of work at home in addition to their 9.5 average hours of work each business day. 63% of those surveyed say they accept being sleepy on the job and just power through the day, and 32% caffeinate to make it. Too much work also impacts personal lives. 36% have said they nod off while driving, and 20% have less sex or have lost interest.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about what really was a Super Tuesday last night, so much more so than the actual Super Tuesday. You know, the irony of this race is amazing. I mean, here you have Florida and Michigan told 1,000 times, don't go early. Now, you know, I hate this whole system. I've talked about how I would revise the whole system in the past. Sorry, Iowa and New Hampshire, but you don't always get to go first. But the rules are the rules, and Florida and Michigan broke the rules and insisted on going first, and now here's the irony. If Florida and Michigan were holding their primaries next Tuesday instead of very early in the process, they would be the kingmakers. They would be the Texas and Ohio. Pennsylvania in April, which every single Pennsylvanian I'm sure thought was silly, being the last major state in the process, will play a major role in determining the nominee. Now, admittedly, that's not usually how it works. Usually the early states get all the credit. But all those states that bunched up on Super Tuesday, California and New York, didn't get that much attention because, I mean, they got some, but, you know, certainly Massachusetts and, the 20 other states, Tennessee, Oklahoma, that joined in with Illinois. I mean, how could Illinois, which is, I think, the fifth largest state in the United States, got no notice whatsoever because it's on the same day as California and New York, the first and the second largest states in the United States. Well, it's also Obama's home state. The point is this. Had Michigan and Florida played by the rules, they would actually play a role in this nomination. Now, I happen to think we've got to do something about them. Because the dirty little secret is not that Hillary can't get enough delegates to win. Most people are saying, hey, there's no way Hillary can get enough delegates to win the nomination. That's true. But there's another secret you need to know. Obama can't get enough delegates to win the nomination. Certainly not in pledged delegates. There simply aren't enough pledged delegates to go around. You've got Michigan and Florida out of the loop. You've got the, what is it? I think it's five, not even 5%. It's like 3% of delegates that are to John Edwards. I think it's the latest ones I saw is Obama won 51% of the popular vote so of the delegates so far, and Hillary Clinton won 46%. So there's 3% for John Edwards. There's the missing Michigan and Florida delegates, and then of course there are the superdelegates. So this will all become a race for the superdelegates. And, you know, that's a problem, too, although I'm not as hard on the superdelegates as many people are. Certainly many Obama supporters are hard on the superdelegates, saying, you know, it's undemocratic. Of course, the superdelegates are elected officials. All of them are governors and senators and members of Congress or elected members of the Democratic National Committee. So it's not like they're complete strangers. I guess I see the role they have to play. I just think the whole process is pretty terrible. And if you want to know the worst, I would say it was in Texas. I mean, do you know what the Texas two-step was last night? Texas has two-thirds of its delegates chosen by primaries and one-third chosen by caucus voters the very same night. You can't vote in the caucus unless you vote in the primary. So basically, if you vote twice, your vote has more power than if you vote once. Well, you know, it's working people. It's hard sometimes to get to vote once, but then you have to go after you vote once and stick around into the evening. What if you've got need child care, right? And stick around for several hours, participate in a caucus. It's just not fair. I've got real problems with caucuses anyway. Yes, I know they help Obama, but primaries are more democratic than caucuses are. And Texas made things worse. Do you know how they decided who the caucus chairman was in each of Texas's 8,000 precincts? There were a few where they could appoint people, but generally they just didn't have 8,000 people, so they put a packet of materials on the chair in the room, and they opened the door, and the first one to the packet controlled the caucus. Yes, I kid you not. People raced inside the room. I could just see, you know, I imagine sort of the Obama supporters being younger and male and swifter of foot than the older, more female Hillary supporters. You know, I mean, can't you just see, right, sorry for the stereotype, but the young black kid knocking over the old white woman to get to the packet? Yikes! That's not the way the Democratic Party works. And there were allegations that people were locked out and that some people were taking caucus names beforehand. And it's just ugly. And it's ugly not because I really blame Obama. I don't blame Obama or Clinton. Some of their supporters were ugly. Okay. Clinton accused Obama supporters of being ugly. I'm sure some were. It's the stupid process. It's a really stupid process. Here, Hillary Clinton won the majority of Texas voters. And it looks, and the votes haven't been counted yet, but it looks like she's going to lose the caucus. Does that make sense? She wins 51% of the Texas voters and loses 52-48 of the caucus voters. And so at the end of the day, she, I don't know, doesn't win any delegates at all. She got a 4-delegate lead out of her win in Texas. And that could all be taken away by the Texas caucus. Just doesn't make sense. I don't care who you support in this race. It just doesn't make sense. And then the delegate selections. Okay, it's crazy. Because we have proportional voting in the Democratic Party, and I'm not against proportional voting. I understand why you have it. But, folks, let's make it statewide. Let's not make it by district. Because what that means is that when you have odd numbers of district, which is purely random, right? Each district is arranged by population. So some districts have 4 delegates, and some have 3 delegates, and some have 5 delegates. If you've got 4 delegates, this happened in a Latino district in Texas, for a candidate to win 3 of those 4 delegates, in this case it was Hillary Clinton, she needed to get 62.5% of the vote. In one case, she got 62.3% of the vote. Barack Obama got 37-point-something% of the vote, and they tied. They each got 2 delegates, even though she had beaten him by 20-plus points. And then if there's an odd delegate race, then if she gets 50.1% and he gets 49.9%, she gets an extra delegate. It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. She needs 62% to matter in one place and 50.1% to matter in another place. It doesn't make sense. I'm not against proportional representation, but we need to revise the system. We need to make it proportional statewide, you know? And that's not so hard to do. If you want to do proportional representation, what I would do, frankly, I take a third. I believe in some winner take all because I think it winnows out the process. So I would say take a third or a fourth of the delegates, make that winner take all. And the remainder, just take the whole state and do it by the percentages. If someone wins 52-48, 52% of all the delegates remaining go to this candidate, 48% to the other. That just makes sense to me, not the silly system we have now. If there's one thing that the primary season has made clear, is we've got a terrible way of choosing a president. And I hope that the Democratic Party learns its lesson with superdelegates, what it did to Michigan and Florida. We just have a crazy, crazy system, and we need to fix it. Now, what happened last night in terms of who voted for Hillary Clinton? Well, she got back a lot of her old coalition. She got back some of the people that we used to call Reagan Democrats, right? Right? White? Right? Right? White working class people. Poor white working class people, non-college educated white people voted for Hillary Clinton by a 40-point margin. And these, I think, many of them were John Edwards supporters, are now turning to Hillary Clinton. And they're people who see that they had good economic times under Bill Clinton. They don't know Obama. They don't trust him because they've really never heard of him until this election. And some of them, yes, are convinced by the unfair negative attacks against him. Some think he's a Muslim or silly stuff like this. Look, the argument that the Republicans will make if Obama is the nominee is that he's the Manchurian candidate. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. The idea of the Manchurian candidate is that some foreign power puts together some person and we elect him president of the United States, and then we find out that he's a spy all along. Well, that's the argument of the Republican Party. You don't know Obama. He really is a black radical. He really is a Muslim. He really is a terrorist, etc. Well, as I said, I want to get the truth out now. What's bad about Obama, get it out. Bring it all out, Hillary. Tony Redzko, Jeremiah Wright, bring it all out. Let's deal with it now. And let's talk about what's not true. You know, he does say the Pledge of Allegiance. To me, it's the silliest thing in the world. I mean, first of all, he says it. Second of all, the Pledge of Allegiance. Why do people care about it? Do they really think he's not patriotic if he didn't say it? I mean, he does, but what if he didn't say it? Is it because it has under God in it, the part that was added in the 1950s? I mean, you know, the original Pledge of Allegiance said liberty, justice, and equality for all. People don't say equality anymore. Does that mean that they're anti-American? It's so silly. But let's get it all out. At the end of the day, I don't know that this is such a bad thing. John McCain is going to seek George Bush's blessings, and I'll get to him in a second. But meanwhile, we have this ongoing, exciting campaign. Both sides, yes, are raising a lot of money and spending it against each other while John McCain can use the money for his own side. But that will think about what's going to happen over the next few months. The media is going to cover this Democratic horse race. They're not going to cover John McCain. His race is over. So every few weeks we're going to hear inspiring speeches by Barack Obama, somewhat less inspiring but still pretty good speeches by Hillary Clinton, and all that coverage will make us know both of them a lot better. They'll also be fighting for votes. Bob Kincaid said at the beginning of this race, and I don't blame him, that, you know, the West Virginia race in May will be meaningless. Well, maybe it won't be meaningless, he now concedes. And maybe if the candidates actually go to West Virginia, they'll have to address things like mountaintop removal, issues that they never would address had we had a nominee by now. And I also think that when people go in every state of the United States and are asked for their vote in every state of the United States, they start to be committed to a candidate. You know, Iowa and New Hampshire voters get this every year, but most of the rest of us don't. And now, if the candidates have to go to West Virginia or Montana or Pennsylvania and personally ask for people's vote, you get to find out more about the candidates, and I think you get a vested interest in them. I don't think this is such a bad idea after all. Now, we talked about Hillary's base and the way that she might pull from Republicans, the Reagan Democrats she might get back. But the reason I chose Obama to begin with was because he reached out to independents. There are a lot of independents out there, and they tend to be the people I know, college-educated, independent voters, voters who sometimes vote Republican, who just have had enough of the Clintons. I know those people. I don't share those views. I don't agree with everything the Clintons have done, but I don't consider them to be the evil machinations that a lot of people assume is true by the stereotype. I do think they play rough. I do think they play sometimes a little dirty, but I think in the scheme of things, it's relatively fair, at least compared to, you know, a Karl Rove or a Swift Boat type thing. But I can't help it. A lot of people don't agree with me. A lot of people don't like the Clintons. There's a lot of Republicans that you say Hillary, and before you go to the second word, they already have their fingers in their ears, and they're going, nah, 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 nah. They will not support her under any condition. The reason I came to finally support Obama was not because of his views on this, that, or the other. I think he's got some things that I agree with and some things she, Hillary, has I agree with, but because I felt he was the better candidate. He could draw independents, and that's true. He still draws more independents than Hillary Clinton. But she draws some of those core Democrats. Many of them in poor working class Ohio went to Ronald Reagan. She makes a good argument, I think, that Ohio and the industrial Midwest are essential in any Democratic victory, and that she appeals to those people more. So, we'll see. You know, part of it is that because I didn't have strong feelings to begin with, part of me just sort of wants to sit back and, I don't know, watch the fireworks. As a political pundit, I have to admit, there's a little part of me that just enjoys the spectacle of it all. You know, it's kind of neat to see a close election. You know, if you've got a basketball team or a football team that you like a lot, you don't want to see them win a blowout against the rival. That's no fun. Who wants to watch a football game where someone wins, you know, 49-0? No, you want your team to just barely eke out a victory in the end. And it's psychological. You know, I can tell you as a Democrat, I want us to win a 50-state landslide against John McCain. But between Obama and Hillary Clinton, I don't know. Let the fight go on. All of this is to say that I think there are a lot of glum Democrats around. Howard Dean is the king of them, head of the Democratic National Committee, who's concerned that we're going to rip each other apart and we're going to be disunified and at each other's throats into the fall. And there certainly is precedent for that. Just look at Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter in 1980, or horror upon horrors, the great evil that was the Democratic Convention of 1968. I wasn't around during that time, but historically it was probably the most clashed convention ever. But we're not there yet, and I hope we never get there. And while I recognize that Democrats shouldn't be fighting amongst themselves in any unfair ways, so far I don't think they've crossed the line. I think Hillary's attacks have been fair. And I think Obama should hit her hard too. Absolutely. Bring it all up. Bring up Whitewater impeachment. If he's too nice to do it, he can have surrogates do it. They probably already are doing it. Bring it on. Let's test these candidates. Let's inoculate them, because I guarantee you the Republicans will. And now let's talk about John McCain. And by the way, again, there's 10 minutes left. If you want to comment on anything I've said, give me a call. Let me know. Agree or disagree? 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let's talk about John McCain, though. The first thing John McCain did upon winning the nomination is went to get the blessing of George Bush. And he did it because he's worried about conservatives. He did it because even though George Bush has only a 30% approval rating in America, those 30% are hardcore conservatives that John McCain needs to win. And we need to always remind our friends and relatives that this is Bush 3. John McCain is Bush 3. They may disagree around the edges, but they really don't disagree that much. For example, they both believe we should be in Iraq for 100 years. That's a major, major thing. A major thing. John McCain believes that having spent $1 trillion in Iraq thus far, having lost 4,000 American lives thus far, and more than 20,000 wounded, close to 30,000 now, not to mention the hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives and the millions of Iraqi exiles, that we need to be there 100 more years. Take what we've spent. It's been 5 years. Multiply it by 20. Now, I know the Republican argument. The argument is if we leave, Iraq goes to hell. And that's true. I don't think you have to dispute that. If we leave, Iraq goes to hell. Iraq is already hell. Iraq will be hell whenever we leave. And the question is a cost-benefit analysis. Could we save an Iraqi life by staying? Probably. Is that worth sacrificing American lives again and again and many times over? Is that worth destroying our economy? Remember, we're not paying for this war. We're going into massive debt. If you want to know why we're in a recession, it's really not that hard to figure out. And it's not a Republican or Democratic thing. Lyndon Johnson did the same stupid thing in Vietnam. He had a war, and it was unpopular, and so he decided not to make the people pay for it. And we had massive debt, and that led to inflation and unemployment and the stagflation in the 1970s. Jimmy Carter's presidency was a failure, but in many ways it was a failure because of Lyndon Johnson, because of what happened 10 years earlier. George Bush is digging us a big hole. It's going to be very hard for the next president. But 100 more years in Iraq will make things a lot worse. Also, I think that John McCain, while he talks a good game, is flip-flopping a lot worse than John Kerry ever did. I mean, let's look at torture. Yes, people will always bring up John McCain's honorable service, and they should, and that's fair, and that's fine. Frankly, if I were debating him, I'd bring it up too. It's almost like the same inoculation, right? Bring up the good stuff that your opponent has before you attack him. Yes, he did serve the country honorably in a war we never should have fought. But John McCain, a man who has been tortured himself, now supports torture. Now think about what this means. John McCain, who came out and passed a bill against the Bush administration's will saying we can't torture people. He got it passed by a 90-10 margin in the Senate. It was veto proof. And then George Bush signed a little signing statement saying basically I'm going to ignore this. So now they're coming back with a more specific bill, saying exactly what you can do and what you can't do. And water torture is torture. Waterboarding is torture. Drowning someone is torture. The Spanish Inquisition considered it torture. The Spanish-American War considered it torture. The Japanese that did it to our soldiers in World War II, it was considered torture. And now John McCain has flip-flopped on torture. The one thing you think he could remain consistent on, he has flip-flopped. John McSame. And on tax cuts, well, again, he voted against them. He recognized they would wreck the economy. He recognized they would lead to massive debt. Flip-flop. He supports them now. Of course, there's the religious right. In 2000, he called them agents of intolerance. Got to get their votes. Flip-flop. And which is the real John McCain? Which will he do? I don't know. I don't know. But I do think that he's running to be Bush the Third. He has decided that to be a Republican today, you must support massive debt. You must support massive tax cuts to the rich. You must support 100 years of war. You must support allowing corporations to control our country. And you must support the shredding of the United States Constitution. To be a Republican today, you must. And by going to George Bush and getting the blessing to be Bush the Third, John McCain is making very clear what kind of president he would be. We have to make it clear to those of us around us whether the winner, the eventual winner, is Obama or Clinton. And I don't know. The race is so close, I still hope they can find some way to run together. And I recognize that Hillary Clinton is more likely to choose Barack Obama than he is to choose her. Frankly, that's a reason to vote for her, because I think she would pick him as vice president. How could she not? He probably wouldn't pick her because, well, you know, I don't know. Having Bill Clinton as the second husband, second gentleman, I don't think we have a name for that yet. But he should. He should. I think Hillary Clinton would be an asset as vice president of the United States. And I think she reaches out to a different demographic than he does. And I think that she would excite women. So even if Obama wins, I think he should pick her. If she wins, she should definitely pick him. We need both in the party. We need young and old. We need men and women. We need idealists and pragmatists. We need people who can give a good speech. And we need policy wonks. We need people who are above the fray and recognize that America is sick of dirty politics. And frankly, we need people willing to get down in the gutter when you have to. They would make a good team. To the extent that they are not good, the other one has the thing, right? I mean, to the extent that you don't like Hillary Clinton, Obama fixes most of her problems. And the extent you don't like him, she fixes most of his. It actually is a dream team. And the racists and the sexists won't vote for either one anyway. Now, the conventional wisdom is they both need an old white man on the ticket. You know, if it's Hillary Clinton, choose Ted Strickland, the very well-respected governor of Ohio, and win Ohio. That's the conventional wisdom. It's not bad wisdom. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I disagree. You know, when Bill Clinton chose Al Gore, they said, "How you can't have two Southern, you know, people in adjacent states," but they did, and they won. They complement each other. C-O-P-L-E-M-E-N-T. They complete each other, Obama and Hillary Clinton, and I have a lot of respect for both of them. Yes, phone at 3 a.m. If Obama's president, he can turn to his vice president, Clinton, or even his vice president's husband, Bill Clinton, and get some advice. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, all the people that say, oh, well, you know, she needs to distance herself from Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton can run his mouth. But you know what? All things being equal, he was the best president of my lifetime. That's not defending his sleeping around. Of course not. But in terms of his policy, and yes, so we can argue about NAFTA. We can argue he was, you know, don't ask, don't tell was terrible. I'm not saying, Defense of Marriage Act. There were mistakes. There were things that Bill Clinton did wrong, but his heart was there. And let's face it, under Bill Clinton, the rich got richer, the middle class got richer, and the poor got richer. It's not a bad idea to have Bill Clinton in the White House, whether he's first husband or second husband. So I don't know. Maybe I feel at the end of the day I'm a lot like Rodney King. Can't we all just get along? I think we can get along. I think we need to look and see the positives of both Senators Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton. And hopefully at the convention, instead of tearing each other apart, maybe come to some kind of deal. Maybe the answer is that the superdelegates will insist, since they're the difference, on making a deal. And the deal will be they have to run together. And wouldn't that make us the most unified, most powerful party for the fall? I think it would. So I've endorsed Obama, but I'm endorsing Hillary Clinton for vice president. You heard it here first. This is Mark Levine, signing off.